gonna go to church on Sunday, 'cause I got nothing left to lose, and it's a good day. It's a real good day for the blues. Dogs outside, and I'm looking for a job. The man I worked for laid me off. Lord, and I worked for him real hard. But I won't let my kids go hungry, no matter what I have to do. And it's a good day.
The great R&B singer, songwriter, record producer, composer, actress, Broadway performer, and very, very importantly, entertainers' rights crusader, Ruth Brown. A lot of people are in the entertainment business are earning their just desserts in terms of compensation because of Ruth Brown. This is called Good Day for the Blues. It is the title track of her 1999 album. She died in the Las Vegas area hospital on November the 17th, 2006, after suffering a heart attack and stroke. She was 78 years old, but her music lives on. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and today I want to discuss with you a planned demise. A planned demise specifically in Michigan. The city of Detroit for years now has been on a terrifying mission. As you know, we've talked about it quite a bit here. The Depression-era miseries that affected the city after the collapse of the auto industry made the once thriving and bustling city into a wasteland with remnants of political leadership hanging on mostly to pick the city's bones dry. The city went way down, but it wasn't yet totally out. There were vast tracts of available land. Real estate interests appreciated the city's excellent location, and it's in the real estate business, they call it its good bones. And it was ripe for reimagining. One requirement, though, stood in the way, and that is a totally clean state was needed. The people, mostly people of color, had to go because they won't fit into what's being planned for the new Detroit. As we covered that story in installments, just tracking the developments that were occurring in Detroit, we found out Detroit was not the only city that was being reimagined or being cleansed of its mostly black population, black and Latino population. So we return to this question today with our guide, Abayomi Azikiwe. He's the editor-in-chief of Pan-African Newswire. He's a Detroit organizer for the Workers' World Party and Moratorium Now, which had sought and still is intervening in trying to prevent the city from shutting people's water off and their utilities off. He has been reporting on the aggressive plan to retake Detroit and the devastating consequences and havoc it continues to cause. But he's telling us today in a very distressing update that it's becoming a point of contagion because this attitude has spread to other predominantly black cities in the state of Michigan. And as we know, it is now going beyond that. It is what's happening with Puerto Rico. It is what is happening with many so-called inner city communities as the urban centers are now redeveloping, but nobody wants that to happen with the population, the populations that are currently there. Abayomi, it is great to have you with us once more. And I want to say a personal word of praise to you because you devote so much of your time in trying to rectify or try to intercede, but certainly trying to educate the community about what is happening and some of the solutions that could come to play if people got themselves together. Thanks so much for being
with
us.
Well, thanks. Very complimentary introduction. Thank you so much.
But it's true. It's true.
I appreciate it. And I also appreciate your, as well as your audience's interest, ongoing interest in what's happening in Detroit and in the state of Michigan. And where do we start? We have some of the same problems we've been talking about over the last 5 years. The housing crisis is still here. There's still a problem with poverty. Water shutoffs are ongoing. There's also the crumbling public education system and efforts to even loot it to a higher degree than it already has been. So there are many issues we can discuss involving the state of Michigan.
Well, let's start with a recent report that gave a very different kind of analysis. It was more of a financial analysis, the kind that investors would be interested in, rating black cities in the state of Michigan. Could you talk about that?
Well, yes. The 24/7 Wall Street group rates cities throughout the United States using various indicators. For the second year in a row, Detroit has been rated as the worst city in the United States to live in. Now, this is quite astonishing. The second worst city is Flint, Michigan, which is about 70 miles from Detroit. But it's very, very astonishing from the standpoint that the city has been trying to project itself, meaning the corporate Detroit has been trying to project itself as a comeback city. They have championed the bankruptcy as something that put the city on a good financial footing, which we completely disagree. They also talk about the investments that have been taking place in the city of Detroit, and even those are highly questionable, and they largely rely on the tax revenue of the people who still reside in the city. And it was quite amazing that they would not only not give Detroit a pass, but put Detroit and Flint at the bottom. So the people like Dan Gilbert and the Illich Holdings Company, the Penske's, Governor Rick Snyder, the corporate mayor, Mike Dugan, are all upset about this report that came out. It was even published in the Detroit Free Press 2 days ago, so people can look it up if they want to. The article is entitled Detroit, Flint, the worst cities to live in, 24/7 Wall Street says. And what they point out are many of the things that we've been pointing out for so many years, the decline in population, the high rate of poverty. They talk about the lack of public transportation, the crisis in education, and also the crime rates. Now, the city has been saying that all these problems are being corrected very, very rapidly, and Detroit is an ideal place for any capitalist, venture capitalist to come and invest their money. But this is very damaging to that narrative, because why would any venture capitalists invest their risk capital in an area that, according even to 24/7 Wall Street, is quite risky? So I don't know how they're going to spend this one, but it's going to be very, very difficult for them to recover from such a devastating report. And what they're saying about the level of poverty, we've been talking about it for many years. A lot of the industrial jobs were taken out of the city of Detroit. There's also the jobs that exist now do not pay a living wage. Then, of course, you have high rates of property taxation, which we've been protesting against for the last 3 years. You have a educational system that has been devastated by the state of Michigan and by the banks. Over 200 schools have been closed in the city of Detroit, which has also fueled the loss in population. Now, rather than deal with these issues straight on, the only response we're getting from the city administration and from the state of Michigan and from the leading billionaire capitalists in the city of Detroit is more spend, more public relations, and more avoidance. So this is not good even for them in terms of their orientation as it relates to their image of rebuilding the city of Detroit.
Well, we leave Detroit itself aside for a second, because I want to go to Flint.
Yes.
And tell us about Flint. We've covered Flint before, but what is the situation now? How is it that this group, which basically forecasts to venture capitalists and Wall Street types where to put their money, and so much of an effort was made to convince venture capitalists to invest in Detroit because it's being reimagined. Yeah. By that, I mean people being carted out, forced out of the city by all kinds of awful means. And we talked about that in Detroit. We'll come back to that in a minute. But how is it that Flint came in second on this yeah. list?
Well, according to the statistics, some 44.5% of the population in Flint lives below the poverty line. Now, honestly, I believe it's more than that. But according to the government guidelines, those are the figures. In fact, it's the highest poverty rate of any city in the United States. You also have unemployment rate officially at 10%, which I believe is much higher as well. And of course, we have a situation with the water crisis in Flint, where the process of emergency management broke off Flint from the Detroit Water and Sewage Department in 2014. And of course, they used the Flint River, which had been heavily contaminated as a result of industrial abandonment, as a source for Flint's drinking water. Soon enough, it was discovered that the drinking water was unsafe. It was causing skin rashes, eventually a lead poisoning and copper poisoning. There was a Legionella outbreak as well, in which several people died. General Motors engine plant in Flint realized it as well, and they were able to cut off their supply from the Flint River and use an alternative supply of water, because the water that was being pumped into people's homes and their businesses was causing erosion in the engines of the vehicles that were being produced at this Flint General Motors plant. Now, you can imagine if you have water that's eroding a brand new engine, what is that doing to people's intestines, their livers, their pancreas? So this is a real serious health crisis. Now, they have begun to replaced the lead pipes in Flint, many of which have been eroded due to the contaminants. However, it's still not enough, and there needs to be proper monitoring, particularly of children who have suffered lead poisoning, because the damage is irreversible. Once it occurs, the child can have all types of problems. Cognitive difficulties in school, behavioral problems, as well as physical ailments. So in a sense, this is genocidal, just to be quite frank about it. Anytime you damage an individual during their childhood with something that was totally avoidable, that will remain with them for the rest of their lives. And of course, the state of Michigan at the highest level covered up the crisis in Flint, saying that the water was perfectly safe to drink. They said this repeatedly. They had the Department of Environmental Quality in Lansing to sign off on that. And even the Environmental Protection Agency was split on the question. One person who wanted to pursue this poisoning of the water was told not to do so. Now, I believe about 13 people have been indicted by the Attorney General in the state of Michigan surrounding this poisoning of the water in Flint. The former emergency manager, Darnell Early, who was later made emergency manager of the Detroit Public Schools, is slated to go on trial pretty soon. But the governor has not been indicted because he still has several months remaining in office. But other officials involved in the Flint water crisis are slated to stand trial. So Flint, of course, is another case of deindustrialization. The city used to have approximately 200,000 people in it. Now it has less than 100,000. And it is considered the poorest municipality in the United States. So all of this is going on. We have been involved in the Poor People's Campaign here in the state of Michigan. And we were up in Lansing on Monday, and there was a delegation from Flint that was there. And they talked about what is still going on in Flint. But poverty across the state of Michigan is extremely high. And we've heard testimony from mothers, senior citizens, children from all across the state of Michigan in regard to their social conditions. So this is something that's being hidden not only in Michigan, but across the United States. Poverty is not even mentioned in the general discourse of the Trump administration, of the corporate media, and even the government-sponsored media like National Public Radio and the public broadcasting system. Almost no attention is focused on poor people. All we hear about is how well the stock market is doing, or if there was a loss on the stock market in a particular day or a particular week. And also the unemployment rate, which is now officially down to about 3.8%. But the question of poverty is never discussed.
I should mention that when this water crisis really broke out, I should say, in the media, the state began providing water, bottled water, to the city of Flint until the situation was ameliorated. But the state has stopped giving water, bottled water, to people. What are they expecting people to do now?
Yes, I'm glad you brought this up. This is another outrage. About 2 months ago, they announced that the program that was funded by the state to supply bottled water to the people in Flint was no longer necessary because the water now was safe to drink. However, they've been saying this for the last 4 years, that it's safe to drink. And people in Flint have denied that the water is safe to drink right now. So people have to get water the best they can. People have been donating water. People have been purchasing water. But this is completely unacceptable. Governor Snyder has bragged and boasted over the last several years about a budget surplus of millions upon millions of dollars. If that is true, then some of those funds should be allocated to correct the problems that exist in Flint, in Detroit, in Highland Park. Highland Park, which is at the municipal enclave of the city of Detroit, also has a water crisis as well. We've been having weekly demonstrations down at the Detroit Water and Sewage Department in downtown Detroit against the water shutoffs. There have been 17,000 shutoffs announced about 2 months ago. Whether those have been carried out, it's not clear. They have given people an opportunity to come down and make arrangements to pay their arrears. But the question is poverty. Now, the problem with the Detroit Water and Sewage Department is that even on Saturdays, when they were supposed to be open, when people who have to work during the week could come and pay their bills, when we announced that we were going to be demonstrating every Saturday in front of the headquarters of the Detroit Water and Sewage Department, the first day we showed up down there, there was a note on the door saying that since there are so many convenient ways of paying your bills, there's no need to be open on Saturday. And I have photographs of that sign that was put on the window of the entrance of the Detroit Water and Sewage Department. So it's just one insult after another. But the people in Highland Park are also having serious problems with their water. I've talked to residents over there. They say they have to run their water for several minutes, and they're even instructed to do this by the authorities before they can consume it. So this is unacceptable as well. So there's a serious problem in the United States right now with environmental quality, particularly related to water. There's been studies done showing that the blood lead levels among children right now in the United States, not just in Michigan, are at increased levels. So I think everyone is at risk. This is, of course, being compounded by a hepatitis A outbreak in the state of Michigan, the largest in the United States, where several people have also died as a result of hepatitis A, a disease that's totally avoidable. It deals with contaminated water sources. The state has, to a certain degree, recognized it, but they have not worked vigorously to eradicate it. And there's very little information about the hepatitis A outbreak in the state of Michigan. It's disproportionately impacting poor people, people from black and brown communities. And as I mentioned before, people have died as a result of this hepatitis A outbreak. There are other diseases related to problems associated with the water supply that are surfacing in Detroit, which are also being covered up. Henry Ford Hospital had done a study that pointed out that some of these infectious diseases were related to water shutoffs, and that information was suppressed. Apparently, some pressure was brought by the city administration against Henry Ford Hospital, which is a leading health institution in the city of Detroit, an expanding health facility in the new center area. And they also have satellites in other parts of the city and the suburbs. Yet this study was never officially released. So it just goes to show that not only do these problems exist, but they're actually being covered up by the officials here in the city of Detroit and in the state of Michigan. But just because your water may be running fine doesn't mean that you're immune from the impact of the water shutoffs and other aspects of the decline in water quality in the state of Michigan.
Now, Flint is, as you said, just about 7 miles outside of the city of Detroit.
Yes,
it is a city
miles.
By itself, but it's contiguous with the city of Detroit.
No, that's Highland Park. Yeah, that's Highland Park. Highland Park is a municipal enclave of Detroit. Flint is about 70 miles outside north of Detroit. Yeah, it's Highland Park that is encapsulated in the city of Detroit.
Well, I'm talking about what I see emerging here.
Right.
we talked with Reverend Edward Pinckney about 3 weeks ago, and he laid out what was going on in another small enclave in Michigan called Benton Harbor. And that essentially was a fight with a corporate entity there, Whirlpool Corporation, seeking to just take the city, just take it. He talked about an unemployment rate and a poverty rate that is unheard of in the United States in this time. And he was wrongfully convicted. The Supreme Court of Michigan actually reviewed his case and reversed that decision. So yeah. Now he's free and he's back to his community activism. But I'm looking here. Most of the cities placed under emergency management are black, predominantly black populations, and predominantly poor. And we have a coordinated effort, it seems to me, to reclaim all of these separate entities and begin the big project. The big project is a planned demise of these communities, which are predominantly African American and Latino, and coinciding with all of this is the state's big plan to reimagine the state. I mean, even Governor Snyder had said he sees it's in his vision that immigrants from mostly Arabic countries could come and repopulate, you know, displace one set of populations for another, you know, a trade-off. You've been on the ground there for years now. You've been part of this effort to resist the cutoffs of utilities and water to people, the tax hikes that caused so many people to walk away from their properties. Is this, in fact, am I wrong in calling this a planned demise?
Yes, it is. I mean, they want to, you know, chase even more African-Americans, Latinos, people from the Middle East, indigenous people, and poor people in general out of the major cities in Michigan and out of the state as a whole. And his reimagination has represented a horror movie for the people who have to live here in the state of Michigan. I mean, there are very wealthy capitalists who have gotten rich and made a lot of profits as a result of his policies, because he's not only cut taxes for the corporations and the most wealthiest people in the state, but he's also utilizing the tax revenue of working people to fund these prestige projects that are being erected by the likes of Dan Gilbert and the late Mike Ilitch and his family. So his reimagination, as Dr. King said over 50 years ago, his dream had turned into a nightmare. Now, we were in Benton Harbor just 2 weeks ago for a demonstration that Reverend Pinckney had organized against the PGA senior tournaments, which are held biannually in Benton Harbor on Lake Michigan on a plot of land that was stolen from the city of Benton Harbor by the previous governor, who was a Democrat, Jennifer Granholm. The park was known as Jean Clark Park. Now it's called the Jack Nicklaus Signature Golf Course. And they are utilizing this gentrification of the Lake Michigan area in Benton Harbor to put even more pressure on the majority black population in Benton Harbor to leave the area. And of course, Reverend Pinckney's work made him a target for the local Berrien County prosecutor's office and the judges. He spent 30 months in prison for a crime where there was no charge. There was no law that he was charged with. There was no material evidence. We sat through the trial and covered the trial. And he was released after 2.5 years in prison. And subsequent to his release, just on May 1st, as you mentioned, the Michigan Supreme Court, in a 6-0 decision, discharged all of the convictions that were handed down by the Berrien County all-white jury and reinforced by the judge with his sentence. So as conservative as the Michigan Supreme Court is, I mean, it's a very conservative court, ruled 6-0 in his favor. It was really an astonishing decision, but it's a well-deserved decision. And Reverend Pinckney is continuing. He hasn't missed a step since he's been out. And he's also, as well, working with the Poor People's Campaign in Michigan. He's one of the coordinators, and he was in Lansing on Monday, where the focus was on the water crisis in Michigan. There's also problems in places like Kalamazoo, the Upper Peninsula, as well, in terms of the contamination of the water, contamination of the waterways, the privatization of water resources by Nestle's corporation, which is taking water almost at no cost and selling it back in a bottle form to consumers throughout the state of Michigan. So these are the problems that are going on here in the state of Michigan. We got Benton Harbor, we have Flint, we have Highland Park, we have Detroit, Inkster, and there are other cities as well that have been suffering similar difficulties. So people should look at the facts. They should not pay too much attention to what Mike Dugan may say or what Rick Snyder will say about the conditions of the majority of the people in the state of Michigan. It's just like this hepatitis A outbreak, which is the worst in the country, yet there's no causative analysis involved. I mean, what is causing the hepatitis A outbreak in the state of Michigan? It seems as if people are not allowed on official level to even discuss this. So this is the most dangerous aspect of this whole situation. Not only are they denying that the problems exist, to the extent that they do, except that there are problems with the water system and the water shutoffs, they will not link those problems with the outbreak of these diseases, which are clearly a result of problems with water and food that have been contaminated as well. And also, the opiate epidemic is related as well, because this is also a source for transmission of hepatitis A, those who are using intravenous instruments to inject themselves with heroin or other forms of drugs. So this really is a national crisis. It's not just limited to Michigan. Trump has talked about the opiate epidemic, but I'm not exactly sure what policies have been enacted to really tackle the problem. But there are a lot of people who are, you know, suffering from overdoses and who are dying from overdoses on a weekly basis in the United States. And it just does not get the type of coverage that is really needed. And in this period, a lot of the people who are dying are white, whereas, you know, 40, 45, 50 years ago, in areas like New York City and Detroit, most of the people who were addicted to heroin were black. So many people thought it was a deliberate flooding of those communities with narcotics in the aftermath of the civil rights and black power movements to put the community to sleep or to divide the community and destroy the community with crime and other forms of destabilization. These are all serious problems that need to be addressed.
I'm interested in your analysis of what is happening. Is Detroit and in surrounding areas were these were places that African Americans came to, from, especially from the South. The auto industry gave a lot of opportunity for people to get well-paying jobs. With unionization, the jobs were secure. It was, in a way, a step up, as they saw it, from the South and the restrictions of the South that did not allow them to pursue, you know, a better life for their children and so forth. And now, in one way or the other, whether through these crises of these health-related crises, or the water crisis, or the absolute demolishing of the central base of employment, meaning the auto industry. It's an opportune time. If you are a real capitalist, you see this is gold. And
yeah.
You know these people will not be able to hold on to their homes. They will not be able to hold on to their lifestyle. They will not be able to enjoy retirement. They will not be able to be able to hold on to their contiguous communities. And I'm wondering what accounts for what seems from the outside, maybe I'm reading it incorrectly, it seems a kind of political impotence, especially on the part of black elected officials, to take on this problem or to give voice to these problems in a way that would encourage a national focus and national help in trying to find a way out. Because it is about, again, the old American story of land grabs. You have the deliberate displacement of people. You have hostile governments doing things that are illegal in order to force people out. And you have, more and more, despite the fact that the profile of Detroit and Flint look so bleak, yet you have people making money hand over fist. And there isn't an overarching body that says, wait a minute, let's take a look at what is happening here. Because certainly there are crimes being committed here.
No question about it. And the politicians, in large part, work not for the people, but for the banks and the corporations. Most of them are part, the African-American politicians are part of the Democratic Party machine. And that machine, just like the Republican Party counterpart, are controlled by the ruling class here in the United States. So if they stepped outside of that framework, they would have to wage a protracted struggle, not only against the political elites, but also against the capitalist class itself. So this is a major problem. But what is so contradictory about this whole scenario is that despite all of the propaganda, the public relations, messaging, marketing, and so forth of the city of Detroit by the billionaire class and their agents within the state, county, and local governments, is that they would get such a poor rating from Wall Street, an aspect of Wall Street, and also another leading corporation, Amazon, one of the largest corporations in the United States now, if not the largest. They were going to offer Amazon $4 billion to come to open up a headquarters here in the city of Detroit. And they came here and did a survey, and they turned them down. for similar reasons cited by the 24/7 Wall Street survey. The lack of public transportation, the poor state of the schools, the deterioration of the housing stock, the environmental difficulties in the city. You know, all of these issues they are citing as a rationale for limiting the type of investment that exists in the city of Detroit and Flint and other areas. That would have been, I think, several thousand jobs would have been created through this Amazon production facility that was scheduled to be brought into Detroit, and they were turned down. Now we see this negative report from 24/7 Wall Street. So it appears as if the powers that be are split on the progress, alleged progress, that is being promoted by the corporate media here in this city. If you watched local television in the city of Detroit, you would never know, particularly the news, that Detroit is still a majority African-American city. According to the 2010 census, 82.7% of the population are people of African descent in Detroit, and only 10.6% were Caucasians. So this is a major, major contradiction as well in regard to messaging. You have news outlets now that have all white anchors, or maybe one black anchor and two white anchors. The blacks are never in the majority. So this gives a false perspective and a false view on the racial and demographic composition of the city of Detroit. So these falsehoods that are being promoted to the tune of millions upon millions of dollars that they're spending to encourage people to come into Detroit and buy abandoned homes, to buy abandoned buildings and factories, and to set up businesses here in the city of Detroit, it's sending a mixed message to those potential investors who may be lured into investing in the city of Detroit. And what's happening, even with the newer residents, many of whom are white, they come into the city being told that this is a golden opportunity to buy homes at a relatively inexpensive rate and so forth. And they stay maybe 2 years or 3 years and they leave. And I've talked to some of them. They say, well, there's a problem with the schools. There's a problem with crime. There's a problem with the lack of public transportation. Environmental quality is constantly deteriorating in the city of Detroit. We could talk about the Marathon oil refinery on the southwest side. We could talk about the industrial facilities also on the southwest side, which is polluted. Those communities, for example, Delray, they're encouraging everyone to leave that area. This area has been occupied for decades by African Americans and other working class families. They're being encouraged to leave, even given money to leave the area. The asthma rates in that area are the highest in the United States due to the environmental degradation. We also have an incinerator that burns waste in an area in the city that is still populated. These are issues that would discourage any capitalists from coming in to invest. So all they really have is the tax captures from the taxpayers, where they take money that should be going to the Detroit public schools, that should be going for municipal services, and also the Detroit Public Library, and turn these funds over to people such as Dan Gilbert and Illich Holdings to build the new, what they call District Detroit, which is the Little Caesars Arena, where the Detroit Red Wings play, where the Detroit Pistons play, where they hold concerts. Gilbert now is building a tall building on the former J.L. Hudson's department store site on Woodward Avenue. And the bulk of that money is coming from the taxpayers. And the people who work in that building, to add insult to injury, a lot of their tax money will not go into the coffers of the city of Detroit, but will go into a so-called development fund for Dan Gilbert's businesses to construct even more prestige projects, which there's no guarantee that these projects will be profitable. So it's similar to what Walter Rodney talked about back in the early 1970s when he wrote that book, How Europe Underdeveloped Africa. In the first section of the book, he talks about the dialectical relationship between development and underdevelopment, that Africa is underdeveloped, Europe is developed because the European ruling classes have systematically underdeveloped Africa through slavery and colonialism. And we have a domestic U.S. model of that that has been taking place, and it's still going on right now, not only in Detroit, but cities across the United States. People are being systematically underdeveloped for profit.
You anticipated my question, because I was going to ask you, where else, or do you see something that is emerging as a pattern with regard to how other cities are experiencing underdevelopment? Is this something that you think is systematic, or is this just, you know, the natural consequence of a capitalist society where people see opportunity and they pursue it?
I think it's a combination of both. If we look how public housing has been destroyed, for example, in Chicago, you have the Robert Taylor Homes, the Cabrini Green, the Ida B. Wells Homes, and others have all been torn down. And that was initiated under the Clinton administration in the 1990s. And a lot of people have left, African-Americans and Latinos have left Chicago and moved into the suburban areas. Some have moved to the state of Minnesota and other areas. We can look at New York and see how they have priced out many people from all sections of Manhattan, from lower Manhattan to Midtown, all the way up to Harlem and Washington Heights. The same thing is going on now in Brooklyn, in the Bronx. Yeah, this is a pattern. Look at the Bay Area in California. Used to have a strong working class African-American community in San Francisco. That has changed dramatically in Los Angeles. Similar situation exists where people are being forced because they can no longer afford to live in these municipalities due to high rents, the high cost of purchasing a home. Also, in many areas, you have food deserts where there's not the availability of supermarkets that sell fresh food, vegetables, fruits. So this is a disincentive for people to live in these areas. And you can also, through this process, break up black communities. So it has a political aspect in terms of electoral politics as well. A lot of people now who are receiving subsidization for housing, whether they be senior citizens, low income, people living with disabilities, are being funneled into the suburbs surrounding Detroit. So you have a lot of African-Americans now that are living in Troy, in Madison Heights, Novi, Wixom, Taylor, Southfield. Yes, so you find black people in all these areas right now, but we've been dispersed, which makes it much more difficult to organize. So we have a tremendous challenge on our hands, you know, working with the Moratorium Now Coalition and other groups in this area. The whole question of how do you organize when the communities you're attempting to organize are being systematically destroyed.
Wow, that's a bleak prognosis.
It is.
But still, as a veteran organizer, what tactics and techniques have you employed to counter that?
Well, we have to do outreach to people living in the suburban areas. A lot of people come to our meetings who no longer live in the city. We have established relations with people in other parts of the state. That's why we're involved in the Four People's Campaign here in Michigan. We've been doing weekly actions in Lansing at the state capitol. This was the fourth week on Monday. There have been rallies, marches, civil disobedience. Probably 100 people have been arrested over the last 4 weeks for demonstrations outside the Department of Environmental Quality, outside the state capitol itself. This coming week, on Monday, the focus is going to be on housing and also the need for a living wage. So we have the Fight for 15 unionists who are going to be there in great numbers. We're going to have people with disabilities who are organizing people who are living with disabilities, who are also being forced out of the city of Detroit and other major urban areas around the country due to the rising rents. One of the leaders is going to be speaking on Monday in Lansing. She is a longtime Detroiter. She used to live in the same neighborhood that I grew up in. And she told me last year that she could no longer afford to live in the city of Detroit. So now she has moved into one of the nearby suburban communities. This is the pattern that's taking place. So we have to break through this. We have access now to the internet. We have social media. So we have other mechanisms for now anyway that we can, unless they start regulating the internet, which I think they're trying to make a case for that. Even, you know, Mark Zuckerberg, of course, has many, many problems. But if you listen to the questioning that he was subjected to earlier in the year, it suggested some form of regulation similar to the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, of regulating social media and the internet as a whole. So if it becomes just like the commercial and public radio networks and the television stations, then it's going to be even more of a challenge to get the message out. We've seen changes, for example, with Google in terms of certain news agencies, certain websites that have virtually been blocked from Google search engines, news search engines, and so forth, under the guise of fighting fake news. But a lot of the news that they're claiming is fake is coming from a left-wing and more progressive perspective. So there's a lot of repositioning, reanalyzing, and adapting that's going on right now here in Detroit and around the country. And that's absolutely necessary. Otherwise, we become irrelevant. They can isolate us, and we will not be effective at all.
Well, I do want to thank you, Abayomi, for your education that you're sharing. Every time we talk with you, it's an education. And it also comes with instruction of what it is we have to do, what it is we have to pay attention to. And as you just said, we have to retool. We have to keep pace with the effort to snuff us out. But I'm so thankful, and I'm sure there are many, many people in Detroit who are thankful that you are active and you are in the game on many levels. And again, I say thank you for the work that you do, and thank you for being with us on Lead Stories, consistently telling the truth of what is going on in your part of the world. Thanks again.
Well, thank you for your and your unbiased coverage of events here in the state of Michigan. It's really, really appreciated by those here and I'm sure around the country and the world.
Thank you. That brings us to the end of the program today. I thank you for joining us. But always it is about helping us link. We're not living in a vacuum. They'd like us to think that. But we are able to integrate experiences and knowledge, more importantly, about what is going on with us as a people. What is it that we have to do to survive. And it starts with being truthful about what is happening to us. Stay tuned. Keep it right here at PRN. Coming up next, Expanding Life with Eric Davis. We'll see each other tomorrow for Free Your Mind Friday. Bye-bye.
I got up early this morning so I could walk the floor. I got to hit the streets, 'cause there's a wolf outside my door. The bill collector's calling, and my kids need better shoes. Gonna go to church on Sunday, 'cause I got nothing left to lose. And it's a good day.